أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، والصلاة والسلام على حبيبنا أبي القاسم محمد وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
أما بعد، يقول الله في كتابه الكريم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم: يوم ندعو كل أناس بإمامهم. آمنا بالله، صدق الله العلي العظيم. Respected brothers in Islam, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I would like to start off by just a hadith which was said by the Prophet, which really caught my imagination, and actually I got scared when I first heard it. And this is من مات ولا يعرف إمام زمانه مات ميتة جاهلية. To translate into English, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says, the one who dies without knowing the Imam of his time dies the death of an ignorant one. Now the reason why this statement to an extent is because you can realize the importance of it. To die the death of an ignorant one is to die like those people who lived during the time of the Prophet, and the Prophet was right in front of them and still they did not believe. And you can imagine what the punishment for those people are. You could be someone who prays, who fasts, who reads Quran on a regular basis, who shows ikhlas. The list can go on, so on and so forth. But if you do not take the time out just to know your Imam, then you can run the risk of dying a death where this does not matter. And a death where this does not matter is scary to start off with, for you could enter the hell without really benefiting from your life. So what I would like to start off with is, what does it know to be your Imam? Is it simply enough just to know his name? You know Imam al-Hujjah Abdullah Faraja, Imam al-Mahdi. You know where he's born. But is this enough just to know this much? No, of course it's not enough. And I'd like to illustrate this by giving you a small example. For example, you could have two people just sitting down there, Mr. X, Mr. Y. The chances are one of them is called Ali, one of them is called Muhammad, maybe Muhammad Ali or whatever. Someone can come up to you and say, who are these two people? One of them you know really well. One of them, you just know his name, and you know where he lives, you know who his dad is. But you can say to them, the first person, his name is Ali, Ali whatever. But I don't really know much about him. So if you want to know more about him, you have to ask someone else. However, the second person, you say, his name is Ahmed Fred, and I know him, and he's going to go to this uni, he's going to go to that uni, he's got this in his grades, where he lives, his dad. You can go on and so forth. And so therefore this illustrates that just simply to know someone's name doesn't mean you actually know him. And therefore when it says you have to know your Imam, you actually have to know your Imam. And there are several stages that, several steps you can take. One step that I'd like to introduce is, you can get to know his father, the 11 Imams that came before him, the Prophet, his mother. قَالَ رَسُولَ اللَّهِ صَلَّى اللَّهُ عَلَيْهِ وَآلِهِ وَسَلَّمْ Al-Mahdiyu min atrafi min wildi Fatima. To translate, the Holy Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, the Mahdi is my progeny through the sons of Fatima. And so therefore, surely, one way to get to your Imam is to go through the sons of Fatima as well. And the point that I would like to get across, the main point that I would like to get across in this little talk, is that, Shabab, you have to know your Imam now, and not when he comes. Now, you get to know him. Now he could come tomorrow. Would you be willing to face him and say, yeah, I know who you are? Another hadith which the Prophet says is, happiness is for the one who will attend the qadam of my Ahlul Bayt and will follow him before his rise. Not when he rises, not after he rises, not after you realize, oh my God, he's come, I have to know him. Before he rises. And also, another hadith which I'd like to appreciate, where you can respect the imams that come before him, is the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam says that this person who knows the imam will accept the leadership of the imams from before him. And we all know as Shia that we believe the imams before him are 11, and the Prophet before them, Khatam al-Anbiya, the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. So surely, to accept their leadership and to get to know them allows you to know your Imam and to get to your Imam. Like I said, this is just one way, you know, to get to know your imam. The point that I would like to base most of my talk on is just to get to know a bit about the imam's history. I would like to give you a brief sections of his history. The first one is the conditions of his birth leading to ghaybah, then ghaybah al-sughra and ghaybah al-kubra. And I'd like to highlight a few differences between them. So first of all, we'll talk about the conditions of his birth. And at the time, the Abbas al-Khalif is called Mu'tamid. So when I refer to Mu'tamid, this is the Abbas al-Khalif at the time. And the Abbas al-Khalif had heard, just like Nabi Musa, that the Imams are 12. And that there will be a son of the 11th Imam, Imam Hassan al-Askari alayhi salam. And he would come and he would finish us off. So when he realized this, he of course became very scared because, you know, Abbasid leaders, they wanted to protect their goals, you know, they wanted to protect their leadership. So what he did was he based a very strict and vigilant spy scheme in Imam Hassan Askari's life, in his house. And of course Imam Hassan Askari spent a lot of his life in prison. And there is a very nice parallel between the birth and the life of Imam Mahdi and that of the Prophet Musa alayhi salam, where Mu'tamid knew that this was very similar, but he wasn't aware of Pharaoh in a time where he thought he could clamp down on the person who was going to destroy him, when he didn't know that he was in his own house and he was raising him, you know, which is, you know, very, very ironic. But like I said, the Abbasid leader at the time was very watchful of the Imam's house, and when Imam Hassan actually was poisoned by Mu'tamid and was rushed to his house from prison, he sent five of his top secret agents with him, as well as a group of midwives, because he was very suspicious of this situation, as you would be. If you've got someone in the prison for a long time and suddenly they're rushed out, you want to be suspicious. However, the birth of Imam Mahdi was very, very secret and it was very concealed, such to an extent where the auntie of Imam Hassan Askari herself came to the Prophet, to the Imam's house one night, where Nergis, the mother of Imam Mahdi Rasulullah Farajah, was sitting. And when she was about to leave, they told her, no, you have to stay, for tonight the 12th Imam will be born. And she was really shocked and baffled, for she looked at Nergis and she did not see any signs of pregnancy. Just like the mother of Nabi Musa, there were no signs of pregnancy. And so she was very shocked, but she realized that this would be the birth of the person that was talked about. And so, on the morning of the 15th Sha'ban, the Imam, the Prophet Imam, Ajullah Farajah, was born at around time. And when he was born, his birth was very secret. And for the first 5 years of his life, he became an Imam at the age of five. You know, there are people that say, how can someone become an Imam at the age of five? When they do not realize that Nabi Isa alayhi salam was, you know, reciting Quran from when he was in the cradle. He became a prophet when he was in the cradle. So he became an Imam at the age of five. And from his life, between his birth and the age of five, he was kept in a certain amount of secrecy. However, the followers of Islam knew about him, and they did visit him very rarely. However, the time when it came when he had to disappear was at the martyrdom of his father. In the funeral he knew he was Imam, and the prayer, the Salah, had to be led by the Imam as well. So he shoved aside his uncle who wanted to pray, and he led the prayer. And Mu'tamid, the Abbasid leader, realized that this was the Imam, and he sent his agent straight away. But by the time the prayer had finished, the Imam had disappeared and gone into the Ghaybat al-Sughra. So now we're going to the Ghaybat al-Sughra, which is the second part of the zakah I would like to talk to you about. And this is said to last between the age when he's 5 to 76, sort of the natural life as you see. From the age of 5 to the age of 76, he is in Ghaybat al-Sughra. But the key area, which is the difference between Ghaybat al-Sughra and Ghaybat al-Kubra, the minor occultation and the major occultation, is that he has personally appointed deputies around, personally appointed deputies who are in constant, they can meet him and they talk to him, and it is narrated that he helps them in the affairs where they want to, you know, release money, homes, and, you know, any affairs, you know, but he answers their questions. And this is, you know, Shaitullah when he is the age of 76. And there are four main deputies that I would like to know, and they are the first one, Uthman bin Sa'id, and the second one, Muhammad bin Uthman, Hussein bin Ruh, and Ali bin Muhammad al-Shamali. They're four well-known people who are buried in Baghdad at the moment, and they were the friends and the personal deputies or wakala of the Prophet at that of the Imam at that time. And they knew how to contact him, and they were in contact with him. However, after Ubay died, the Imam did not have any personal appointed deputies, and this is known as the Ghaybat al-Kubra. And the Ghaybat al-Kubra started in the year 329 Hijrah, and of course it continues to today, and only Allah and the Imam himself knows when it's going to end. And in this time, the main difference again is the Ghaybat al-Kubra, that we had no personally appointed deputy, so we can't go to someone who we know is the deputy of Imam al-Mahdi and ask him questions. However, you know, we have traditions where we know that there are many people who can reach a certain stage, you know, maraji and so on, who may have contact with the Imam, but it's not for definite. Whereas in Ghaybat al-Kubra, they knew for definite that there were people who were in contact with him. However, now we do not know whether they are in contact for definite or no. And so therefore, the Imam shows himself in an unknown man, you know, in an unknown fashion. He comes and he attends congregational prayers, he attends lectures, but people do not know he is there. And even those who recognize him, they usually recognize him after he has gone. You know, after he meets them and then he disappears, then they realize that he is the Imam. And so, well, this is where I would like to, you know, to tell you a little story. I know you love stories, about someone called Sayyid Muhammad Jabal Amili. Sayyid Muhammad Jabal Amili was traveling. He was telling his friend about a travel where he went to Meshed once in Iran, where Imam Rabba is buried. And he's telling him that he went to Meshed, but he didn't have much money. He had a difficult time there. You know, he was just getting by. And he got to a stage where he didn't have enough money left for even to buy a meal for food. And so he was hungry. However, he found out that there was, you know, a hamle, a group of people who were going back to his homeland. And he went to them and he realized he didn't have enough money. So they wouldn't let him on, of course. So what he decided to do was he went straight back to the shrine of Imam Rabba in Meshed, and he prayed and he wept there, and he said he was praying for Allah to help him, you know, to provide him with some sort of, you know, food or even money just to get back home. Because he knew if he was to stay in Iran, the harsh winter of Iran would kill him. Because he did not have a proper place to stay, he did not have enough money for food, etc., etc. And so after he was at the shrine of Imam al-Rabba, he decided to walk back to the hamlet to plead with them one more time. However, on the way back, he got lost, he lost his way, and he ended up in the scorching desert of Iran. I'm not quite sure how he can miss it by that much, but he ended up in the scorching desert. And when it became dark, he realized that he was about to die, for he had searched around the whole of the desert around him, and he could not find water, he could not find food, he could not find anything to eat, and he knew that tonight he was going to die. And so, when it became dark, he slept and he submitted himself for death. However, he heard the sound of beasts and, you know, the animals in the desert. He suddenly woke up, you know, and, you know, as I say, you know, so then he was scared or something. And then he saw a spring of water, you know, just down there, and he thought it was a mirage. He ran to the spring of water. He realized that it wasn't a mirage. And he drank from the water, and he did his wudu, he did his prayer, he did his shukr. But he says by that time, he had completely run out of energy. No food, nothing. He was about to die. So he went back to sleep, ready for death. But after he slept, he woke up again, and he saw a man come towards him. He was riding a horse, and he was hidden. Very, very similar sight, you know, you might recognize. However, he did not, you know, think away straight away with the Imam. It was quite the opposite. He thought maybe this person's a robber, and he might come to me, and you know, the robber's in the desert at the time. So he thought, he might come to me, he might see I have no money, he's going to kill me because he's going to be angry. But what happened was that the robber saluted him, and he said his salam to him. And he said to him, you know, what's your problem? Why are you in the desert at this time? He said to him, I have no money, I'm lost, I'm hungry. The robber said to him, why are you hungry? There's three men right next to you on the floor. So the man looked down, no, he didn't look down actually, he said to him, why are you joking with me? I know there's no food around here. Don't joke with me, just leave me to die. So then the man said, no, I'm not joking with you, look behind you. He looked behind him, he saw there were 3 million on the floor. Look forward again, first one disappeared. And then, what he realized, and of course there was the imam, like I told you, they realized the imam and he's gone. And there were 3 million. So he ate the first million, kept 2 with him. And he went straight ahead and he found his hamlet again, and he was safe and he went back home. So you know, that's a nice story. So basically, this is the main aim of the story that I want to get to you, is that the Imam is here, and he is here to help you in the time of need. And there's a common misconception in the Ummah that the Imam is coming, you know, he's coming, but he's here. And this is just one example. And there are hundreds, you can read, there's a whole book about it. And there's also a common misconception that the Imam, we're waiting for him. But we're not waiting for him, he is waiting for us. And as soon as he sees that there is an ummah which is very strong enough to fight against the injustice in the world, it's very similar to Imam Hassan alayhi salam. Imam Hassan alayhi salam didn't have an ummah around him which is strong enough, so he has to sign a treaty with Muawiyah. However, as soon as the Imam sees that he has an ummah which is strong enough to fight injustice, believe me, he's coming. And he will fight, and you have to be ready. And the reason why I say this is because 15th of Sha'ban is coming soon. Ulaqat al-Imam al-Hujjah alayhi salam. And so all I want to ask you is this. You hear the society today, New Year's resolutions, you know, every New Year, you know, they're going to stop biting their nails and stop smoking. It never works, of course. But 15th of Sha'ban is coming, Ulaqat al-Imam al-Hujjah. Just please make a small, you know, resolution just to get to know your Imam. And just to get to know your Imam more and more and more. And the Prophet himself, sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, says, the one who does not dedicate or allocate at least one night a week, to study the details of his religion is not one of my people. And that's from the Hal Anwar, volume 1, page 176. So, you know, just because I'm not making that up. Okay. So, you know, just let's say one hour of that one night a week, just to get to know your Imam. And inshallah, say dua that the Imam is coming as soon as possible, inshallah, and that many of us among us in this room can become his deputy and can become in his army. And will be part of those who are saved on the Day of Judgment. Because trust me, I would like to go back to the ayah which I said at the beginning of the speech. يَوْمَ نَبْعَقُنَّ أُنَاسٍ بِإِمَامِهِ, which translates to that, you know, roughly, no, it translates that we will call the people on the Day of Judgment with their Imam. And trust me, if you get to know the Imam, as the Hadith says, before his rise, on the Day of Judgment, he's not going to forget you. And inshallah, we can all be part of his army and be victorious. Inshallah, gain Jannah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.